Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research. This is episode 119. Hello, Hunter.
Hello, Jeff.
In the spirit of getting right to it, because we like to get right to it, and I know you're champing at the fucking bit for this one.
I'm fucking champing.
You're fucking bidding at the champs. Wait here.
I am.
The fucking am. The trans champs. We'll get to them. First, we want to thank our Patreon subscribers, every one of you, all 23 of you now. The newest additions to that supportive team are Simo Mirlanen, Eric Berg, Daniel Bondison, and Mike Beam EHG. Wonder what that EHG stands for. Any guesses, Hunter?
I just wonder. Earless, hatted goodness.
I think it stands for I hate God, hates Gad.
I hate Gad.
All right. So the Patreon page is a new thing for us, and we're really stoked to have 23 of you subscribers supporting us. If you want to support us and keep us motivated to keep producing and be more prolific and just continue to do this, because it's been, what, 6, 7 years? Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's been,
yeah.
Let's see. No, it's been, 6 years.
Yeah, crazy, right? You can find us at patreon.com/radicalresearchpodcast. We eventually are going to have some exclusives for subscribers, but until we do, I'm not going to announce that we will. It's just simply a way for you to support and give any level of subscription that you like, from 1 cent a month to 100 a month. $10,000 gets you a Bathory Octagon show, which will be exclusive only to you if you're the $10,000 donor.
How about that?
Bah, bah, bah. Cha-ching. You can also send us a PayPal donation the old school way at radicalresearchpodcast@gmail.com. That is our ID. That is also our contact address. Want to thank Robert Zaccone. Thank you, Robert. He did just that recently as well. And by the time you listen to this, we should be soon, probably the same week, if not the week following, launching Deserts of Hex number 2. Anything you want to say about that? In the run-up to that.
I just received the shipment today, and I cannot even begin to tell you how beautiful it looks, how proud of it I am.
Hell yeah. Oh, man.
My boy, my dear friend, Thomas Knoll, did all the work he put into it. It wouldn't have been possible without him. Got you and our dear friends, Paul Stolpe, Force Pitts, Ryan Madsen, just a fucking A-team.
Yeah, and there's lots of intriguing material in it, just like the first one, perhaps even more so.
This one is a step up. It looks gorgeous. Pieces on David Lynch and Badalamenti. There's a 20,000-word exploration of the Death Spell Omega discography. But a great conversation with John McEntee from Incantation.
And lives in my town, Greensboro, right here.
Yep. Piece on the final Scott Walker record. So I'm very, very, very proud of it.
You guys are nuts. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, so and also in my world, shout out to my dude, Gail Perlow, also one of my best friends. And Nathan Sapp and Chris Rushing, the Gordon Shade record will be available on vinyl pretty soon here. And also the second Plague Psalm record, the first full length, Gifts of Wrath, which is a thing that Gail and I do together, will be available via Crucial Blast very shortly.
Right on, man. Damn. No less, you're going to go play a couple shows with Agalloch in Australia.
Yeah, a little band out of Portland.
Little country called Australia.
They're you know, if they keep it up, they're gonna go places.
Short little plane ride across the pond for you.
Just a little quick trip.
Well, that's all really exciting. Can't wait to talk to you after the event, and you can give us the eyewitness account. And congrats on all that stuff you're achieving, man. It's really amazing.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Okay, largely up to you.
Sorry?
I said it's largely up to you.
It's largely
when I was a teenager, like, you made me want to do this shit.
Well, right on.
Okay.
And I'm still
You're
and I
a continued inspiration to me.
well, thank you. Well, no, well, you have been to me. Doesn't
Oh God. Oh, all right. Hey, look, let's just stop sucking each. Look, let's not start sucking each other's dicks, right?
Just yeah, gentlemen, yeah. The great Pulp Fiction quote.
You an oak man, Jimmy?
You know, you know, man, Jimmy.
Oh,
Let's not start quoting Pulp Fiction. We'll be here all night. We are going to move to San Francisco for this exploration, particularly the mid-90s, early 90s, into the early 2000s, and a band called The Champs. That's how they began. By I think the even the mid-90s, right after their demos, I believe, there was a claim by another band of the same name on The Champs, so they changed it. We'll talk about those changes because they didn't change it to the fucking Champs right away. The outfit that called themselves the Champs recorded that hit song Tequila in 1958. I think everybody knows that, right? Do you like that song?
No.
Yeah, it sucks. So fuck those Champs, man. You know, there's only one Champs in our world, and it ain't the Tequila Champs. But look, they had the name first. So I hardly know where to start. We are going to listen to this band chronologically. I think that makes sense. Even though they're technically not broken up, they've been really dormant for a long time. So I feel like this is just a career survey. One, to get your take on the Champs before we start listening to the demo tracks. You're more of a math rock fan per se than I am. I mean, I have an appreciation for it, but I think you've delved further. And
Yeah.
what is their place in the math rock world, and what was your introduction to the Champs?
I don't think they have a place in the math rock world. I think they're too metal for that.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, I think that they look like a math rock band, but I don't think they're a math rock band at all. And I mean, if you think about math rock in terms of like Don Cab and Breadwinner,
Those are the two big ones.
Those are the totems.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Champs are an actual metal band.
Well, they are. They are, and that's part of the intrigue because I've always heard them as at least belonging under the math umbrella, somewhere in the Venn diagram. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's my opinion. I also think they're a metal band too. I guess I don't believe in the thing of like, well, they're too metal to be math rock. I mean, I feel like most math rock has some abrasion to it
It does,
that is kin to metal, you
but it
know?
does not have majesty.
Okay. Majesty is what it needs. That's the ingredient you're looking for.
And Champs has majesty.
Indeed, they do. And we will hear it, especially on Thor is Like a Mortal, but that's we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, this band is intriguing.
They're puzzling.
They are puzzling. I love them as soon as I heard them, which we'll get into in a bit, but we're going to kind of rewind because in 1994, a couple years after their formation, this trio, and we should probably name the guys on the demos, it's Josh Smith, Tim Soto or Soti, and Adam Cantwell. And this is the trio that recorded two demos, one called Triumph of the Air Elementals and one called Songs for Films About Rock. Amazing name. And here's where it gets fun with this band, because not only are they musically impressive and different as hell, really just such a unique thing, very singular, they have the best titles. We're going to listen to a little bit of Guns in Our Schools from Triumph demo from 94, and then from the Songs for Films About Rock demo from 94, we're going to listen to a song that is, yes, it's called this. So then I was all, why do you say fuck my style? And that is the best song title of all time. So then I was all, why do you say fuck my style? You just know that was so, like at some party, somebody said that and they were like, song title.
Thank you. they had continued down the vocal road, they could have been like a glam band, like a Elton John meets David Bowie kind of a thing.
I was gonna say like a Lemon Twigs kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And I guess we should point out what should be obvious, but also is kind of yet another unique aspect of this band is they are mostly instrumental. But then every album or demo, they'll have one song with vocals. It's kind of that like reverse image thing of the normal rock wave, which is like,
Yeah, right.
nine songs of vocals and the token instrumental.
Yep,
They
nope.
turn it on their head, and you always get this one song. You're like, oh, suddenly we have these kind of vocals, and they're these like really bare, naked, kind of genuine, not spectacular, but not bad things, like indie
Yeah,
rockers.
no, very, yeah, unguarded.
Unguarded. And people not familiar who listen through to that and wondering why we really like these guys, like that stuff is definitely rough.
Oh yeah.
Especially the songs for Film About Rock demo is really raw. They're not tight yet, actually.
At all.
But I like the choice of the early Motley Crue song. It works. That descending sort of riff sequence, or just it kind of works for what they would get into. But believe us, this band gets way better, and we're going to hear it basically instantly when we get to the album Three, which came out in 1997 on Frenetic Records, which were from San Francisco. All the successive albums would be coming out on Drag City, is that right? I think all of them, which are a label of some repute.
I've given that label a lot of money over the years.
You have, I've more than I have. I first found the Champs or got interested in the Champs when I was at Maniacs. It was 99, maybe 2000. I don't know. But this guy named Tom Haley, who I knew, who I would later become really good friends with. But at this point, I feel like he was just sort of an acquaintance who we had relapse in common in terms of being employees there at different times and having mutual friends and getting along really well and liking a lot of the same bands. I mean, he and I, even back then, were always talking Decroits and always talking Confessor and always talking Trouble. Our friendship was underway, but I'm glad to say that like I've seen him way more since I moved to North Carolina since then, and we're quite close. I love the dude, and I know you do too.
Dude.
We had probably our mutual greatest listen to nothing face ever together in my music room, the three of us. Remember that?
Oh my God. But I remember all three of us just flipping out.
Yeah, we were. I mean, air guitar all the way, air drum all the way, air vocal all the way. It was just the whole duration was great. It
Madness.
was a Voivod nothing face party that night. So anyway, little background there, but so this CD shows up and I'm at my desk at the Maniacs office, and I get the CD and I'm like, oh, it's from Tom. I can't read the band name because it's C4AM95, which if you look at it right, kind of says Champs, but that's what they were going by at this time to avoid the conflict with the 1958 Champs, the Tequila Champs. And it just nothing like about this said, I'm going to love it. It looks so obscure and just kind of, I don't know. I didn't know what to think of it. There's a million songs on it. It looks like, four programs. And how many songs are on this one? Like, it's looking like at about 28 or something. And I just know nothing about this. And so I pop it on and I was like, I hear basically this super obscure, raw, somewhat garagey sounding trio that don't sound like a metal band necessarily, but they sound like they're highly influenced by Confessor and highly influenced by Trouble. And there's a lot of Queen in there too. And it just blew me away. I was like, what the fuck is this? This is, it was the most original thing I think I'd heard up to that point. I was like, what the hell? And so I thanked Tom profusely. I still thank him for the gift of the Champs, and I've become a huge fan. And I got in touch with Josh Smith, one of the guitarists, and by this time they'd got a new guy in the band, another Tim named Tim Green. And this lineup was the one: Josh, Tim, and Tim. This is the Champs. But I got a hold of Josh, and he was really stoked that I was into it, and we talked about a lot of the same bands, and he was into everything that you and I are into. You know what I mean? Like he was kind of a metal brother.
Oh,
He he's also the wasn't he also in Weakling? He was also, I think, into Voivod. We were chummy. He sent me 2 7-inches, and then I did an interview with him. I was like, this is metal enough. I'm putting this in. This is metal coming from such a different perspective, yet it couldn't be more metal. It was sort of metal in a new guise for me, and I just had to put him in Maniacs. I just had to get him in there. And so we did the interview. I put him in, and I think I turned a lot of people on to Champs because I've heard it over the years from various people like, dude, I got into Champs thanks to the Metal Maniacs article, and I'm just really grateful for that. That's
That's how I'm here.
okay. I'm evangelical, if nothing else.
You're like the Johnny Appleseed of mathematical metal.
I get a tattoo. I don't have any tattoos, but that might be the first tattoo I get. The Johnny Appleseed of, what'd you call it? Mathematical metal? Funny. All right, let's listen to a little bit of Three. This is a little thing called Flawless Victory. So Hunter, you picked that snippet in particular, and I'm really glad you did. It's a great pick because it really shows their ethic about not using a bass guitar. Do you know what I mean?
Two things about it. So, like, clearly they've become a tighter band and more metal, but you can still hear the ground amp buzz in the pauses, and also no bass.
Yeah, no bass. I'm glad you brought up that amp buzz too. That's always fun when you can hear the room, right? Yeah, and especially it really works in the ambience of an album like Three. But yeah, the thing about the bass, and you know, of course, I asked such an obvious question to Josh when I did the interview, and I remember him telling me that it was very deliberate. I always figured, well, you know, at this point anyway, with Three being the only thing I knew, I always kind of assumed it was like, ah, they just couldn't find a bass player. You know what I mean? Like, it was a curious choice. So I asked him and he said, well, it's just because they wanted to highlight guitar tones. That's basically one of their main goals, I think, as a band was to do things with tone and to highlight tone. And it was all about tone, right? Like that searching for that perfect guitar tone. And he thought the bass would obfuscate that a little bit in the recording. And I think he's right. And it became one of their signatures, you know, this baseless thing. But Flawless Victory, you know, there's moments where it's a little tinnier, a little treblier, a little thinner, but then they crush in with those kind of early Trouble type riffs, and you hear that fat tone. And their recordings would get better after this too. The next three sound amazing, and that's where the tone really comes in. But you can hear them reaching for that anyway on that snippet. You picked Heart to Heart. Was there anything in particular about this song on Three that made
Yeah,
you want?
just to show off that other side of them, I think it's really important.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Like kind of Kraftwerk, just weirdness.
Yeah, and they always carried that into all the rest of the records too, right? They weren't just like one thing.
A huge part of who they are.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, nice pick.
Oh, you're welcome.
Why don't you take us to Tonight We Ride?
This one's a triumphant song, I think. It's an epic.
Tonight We Ride, very kind of Manowar-y. It's
Very
great.
metaphoric.
Love the title, love the song. So I think there we hear where I might have in 99, 2000 been really excited by a band like this who sounds highly influenced by Trouble and by Confessor. Like
Very much.
those two bands in particular are in their riff DNA so hard. And I was glad to know that, like, when I first got a hold of Josh, that, oh yeah, indeed, we're super into those bands. And because I can't imagine there weren't many bands outside of the actual doom metal spectrum that would claim influenced by those bands. You
Nope.
know what I mean?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, no, and it's all in their DNA. And it's not just aping, you know what I mean?
Not at
Like,
all.
yeah, no, it seems like they're a successor.
I mean, look, the Franklin Wartell tone in Trouble is amazing. Their riff construction is amazing. The way they play off each other is amazing. Like, the two guitars will sometimes be playing different things within a riff. Like one
Oh,
guy
yeah.
will take the kind of, throttling riff part, the other guy will kind of do a melody along with it. Champs does that. And Confessor took the Trouble influence. I mean, Confessor's, anybody that knows Confessor knows that their love of Trouble. They've done two covers. They were very much modeled on that really particular thing that Trouble did so well in the 80s. and made it their own, made it more techie, made it colder, made it more alien, more anguished even. Then this little like indie rock trio comes and smashes down the doors.
Hey guys, we're here.
Yeah, hey. Right. This is a interesting album because it does have a lot of songs. It's an interesting listen because you're just popping in and out of their riffier personality, and then, as you say, the more Kraftwerkian element of their personality too. I always hear a little bit of Chrome in Champs as
Oh,
well.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you can see I haven't adopted or adapted. Haven't taken to the habit of calling them the fucking Champs. They are just the Champs to me.
Either. No. I won't tonight.
You won't.
No, I won't.
Well, you're a good boy. You don't swear too much. You know what I mean? You don't
I know.
curse.
I know, but
Well,
good Southern boy.
yeah, good Southern boy. Never fucking curses. We're gonna move on to the album four, Roman numeral four. Came out in 2000 through, so 3 years later. And this is just a better production. It's just as diverse. I mean, I think it's all around better. Do you have a favorite Champs record?
Yeah, three.
Oh, you like three more than four and
Oh
five.
yeah, I fucking just sorry, I didn't mean to swear.
There you go again. Oh, going to
Oh
hell.
no. Yeah, no, I just have a real boner for three.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to argue that.
It's a real slim difference between three and four for me.
Yeah. Well, listen to where they went from here. This is great stuff. We're going to listen to two songs in a row from four. First one's called "These Glyphs Are Dusty," and the other one is "Esprit de Corps," not "Esprit de Corps," but "Esprit de Corps." We'll be right back.
some like perfect alternate universe, Esprit de Corps could be a Rush song.
Oh yeah, it does have similar melodic motif as like.
It's got that that and also that just kind of hopeful, I don't know, like permanent waves sort of vibe.
I was gonna, oh, that, I mean, that works. I was gonna say the first side of Farewell to Kings has,
Oh, you know what?
you know,
Here,
that brightness that, you
I
know.
I side with you.
Okay. You seed to me. You
There's
seed.
you're right.
Yeah. And then these glyphs are dusty is just kind of, I mean, it's just it's metallic. It's a lot of palm muting kind of thing. I mean, it's like Metallica had decided on Justice to go garage, you know, and just and be instrumental and not really give a shit anymore.
Okay.
It might sound like that. These Glyphs Are Dusty is very heavy and dense and
No, dude, I mean, there's a very like morbid, musty quality to a lot of the early Champ stuff.
yeah, those are really good terms to describe it too. Really good.
Yeah, I mean, really homespun, and I think you said these are. In that piece that you wrote in Maniacs, you were like, this is like genuine metal that like is dressed up like indie rock.
Yeah, oh, completely. I still hear it that way.
Yeah, but I mean, but the metal of it is totally legitimate.
Yes. And then we get to this song called Thor Is Like Immortal, which is their masterpiece. I don't think there's hardly any question. Would you agree with that?
Did you just hear my utterances?
I did. You were kind of, yeah.
Mm.
It's how you sound when you look at fresh buttered biscuits out of the oven. Those are the noises you make.
Yeah. I'm like the fucking go to Mindy's up in this bitch.
So you agree, Thor is Like Immortal is their masterpiece.
It is unquestionable. It is their masterpiece.
Yeah, it actually was on one of the 94 demos, but in such a very different form. And here, you said the word majesty earlier. That's this song. This is their orchestration at its finest. This is their Brian May influence writ large. It's all that and more. I also like the title, Thor Is Like Immortal. So here are two thoughts on that title. Are they saying the band Thor is like the band Immortal? Thor is like Immortal. I could see that. But I'm also, it's almost like this kind of like surfer dude way of saying Thor is immortal. Thor is like immortal, dude.
Bro.
It's probably the bro thing, right? It's such a weird title.
Bro, Thor is like immortal, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. needless to say.
Well, one thing I'll say is the thing of regret. I wish we could play the whole thing. I urge people to listen to the whole thing because more than any other snippet we've ever played on this godforsaken podcast, this is the one song that has to be listened to in its entirety to really even get across our love of it and our point, because it's just such an orchestrated, beautiful piece that goes through some different
It is.
modulations.
I mean, it's a chamber. It's a a chamber ensemble, but with just electric guitar.
Yeah, which kind of brings me to this other thing I love about the Champs. When they, in their liner notes, like their instrumentation detail is incredible. It's like those, 70s prog records where they would give you all the nerdy details of like the equipment being used, like right down to the, models, numbers, makes, all that. They like to give that, which is awesome. And Thor's Like a Mortal was played by Josh and Tim Green, because Tim Sote is not on here, the drummer. There's no need. It's an ambient piece. But Josh plays a 9-string Stratocaster, a Hagstrom 2, and an Ebow. And then Tim plays a Rickenbacker 360 and a Hagstrom 2. Good information there.
Good talk.
Good talk.
Yeah, good talk about the gear.
I saw this band in this era and they played Thor's Like a Mortal. They played with Don Caballero. It was in New York. I forget the venue. I want to say it was, well, I don't remember the venue. But I met Josh there. It was great after that correspondence in the Maniacs article. It was fun to talk to him for a while. Have you ever seen video of these guys like live?
No.
Yeah, Josh is quite the showman. He's all these poses, all these kind of like over the top rock star crouches, and the Ritchie Blackmore thing where you're like bent down and one knee's splayed out all the way to the right, and you know what I mean, like just arms up in the air. Like it was kind of part irony, I suppose, but part completely genuine. I was like, well, this guy just is a great performer. You know what I mean? Like it didn't look dumb. It looked awesome, actually. But it was really unexpected. Like,
Yes, sure.
yeah, it brought like a certain levity to it. But it was nice to meet him. I went to that show with Stephen O'Malley, who for some reason I always remember wore a Soundgarden shirt. I can't tell you all the other times I hung out with Stephen, like what shirt he was ever wearing, but like I do remember at the Champ show there was a Soundgarden shirt. So, you Sun fanatics out there, that's some great trivia for you. But Don Cab were pretty good too.
Yeah, I mean, pretty good little band.
And that's even though you're of the opinion that the Champs aren't math rock, it's still a very good pairing, right?
Oh, it's a perfect pair. Yeah.
Yeah. We move to the album 5, and in a way, I think this is probably their most diverse and overall satisfying album. I mean, 3 is very diverse too, but there's something about 5 that I think they just bring it all together. If Thor Is Like a Mortal was on this, it would be my favorite Champs album. But I think at this point, I don't have a favorite, but something about 5 is it's probably the one I'm going to pull out and listen to next. This is a bit from that.
Maybe we should call the episode something about five.
Something about 5. We should. I joked about calling it the one with the ridges because it's so inconsequential and idiosyncratic to what we're talking about. The same way that, like, oh, we, you know what we didn't
I'm
mention about?
so glad. I'm so glad that you still get joy out of that.
I do. The one with the ridges. But the one thing we didn't mention about 3, I want to go back and mention this to listeners because you and I know this. We talk about this like once a year. But the genius of a song called The Tennis Book, which I've talked to Josh about back in the day, and I remember him saying, well, we just wanted to like go with the most absurd thing we could think of. Like, let's write an instrumental metal song about a book about tennis. I mean, dude,
Yeah.
the funniest shit ever. Okay, but let's get back up to 2002, the album 5. This is a song called I Am the Album Cover. Yeah, so the first part you heard there was I Am the album cover, that beautiful floating celestial thing that sounds like it was recorded live. But the only thing that was recorded live, according to the booklet, is the song before it, Children Perceive the Hoax Cluster. So I'm not sure that the booklet's right, or maybe the whistling we heard was affected. And then after that, we heard a bit from another song, Nebula Ball Rests in a Fantasy Claw. Nebula Ball Rests in a Fantasy Claw is a very literal song title, I think. It reminds me of like one of those just wizardy snow globe type things that you'll see at like a novelty store
Yeah, so
with a claw holding it. Isn't that what you get out of that?
it's your thungal kind of a vibe.
There you go. Hey, freaks, this is Jeff. We never do this. We never do this post-production fix error type of thing. But in the edit of this episode, I'm realizing that Hunter and I, for years now, since this album came out in 2002, we've been listening to it wrong. It's indexed incorrectly on the CD. That's the only way we've ever listened to it. If you pop it into a good player, it does not give song titles, as some of older CDs do not do. And we have misintroduced and misinterpreted these songs under the wrong titles for years and years and years now. But we're just going to correct this now. The two songs that we just listened to are actually Children Perceive the Hoax Cluster, indeed the one live track on five. And then the meatier, heavier I Am the album cover follows it. An additional correction is needed for the next song we'll play from five. It's not called Police Knots 2000. It's actually called Major Air Bros Landing. So we have a lot to learn about this album, and we have a bone to pick with the people at Drag City for totally fucking up the sequencing. Thanks, guys. Hopefully, this correction wasn't too detrimental to your listening pleasure. And now back to the episode. As we can hear, I think the sound and the production and the capture of the guitar tones especially is even better on this album. Do you have a thought on that?
And yeah, like in despite, the song titles and their noted snark, I think you can hear in this music how sincere they are.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. They have fun delivering this super original music. It's weird, like they were pretty prolific for a while. They would take a few years between albums generally. They just dropped off after 2007. We'll get to that last album, Six, pretty soon here. But it's too bad they didn't last longer. And I wonder what their legacy is, if they even have one. Like, are there people out there who still love this band? Are there people out there still discovering them? Hopefully, we turn a few people on with this.
That's why we do our good work.
That's right. That's right. That's right. But I think they're a really special band. But you know what? Fuck everybody else. We know it. We like it. It'll be with us for the rest of our lives. Hell with you if you missed it.
Hell witch.
Hell with, oh, hell with you.
Hell witch.
Hell with you. Police Knots 2000. That's the next track we're going to listen to from the Most Excellent Five.
Man, I have a lot of thoughts on this one.
Mm.
Allman Brothers, Campbell, first generation Nintendo soundtracks, all of it.
Yeah, you're dead on with each of those. I love that. Yeah, who else reminds us of Allman Brothers, Camel, and Nintendo soundtracks?
Just so badass.
Yeah, that's a good.
I was in awe. Listen to that one.
I love it. Well, and that's, you brought in Heart to Heart from Three, and it's all over their albums. We didn't really feature the diversity of Four as much, but yeah, every album has weird twists and diversions like this. And I love when they leave the eclectic metal stuff to equally eclectic, weird prog art shit. Like
Totally.
it's a very attractive feature of their approach. I also think Police Nuts 2000 sounds a lot like something that could have been on Chrome's Alien soundtracks.
Yeah, you keep bringing up Chrome, and that's so fucking dead on the money. And it's something that I've never really thought about until you brought it up tonight.
Okay.
And it just keeps making more sense to me.
Especially that album. Like, not so much Half Machine Lip Moves, not so much some of the later stuff that I also like, but like, it really is squarely in the Alien soundtracks area, which is just fine with me because I think that's my favorite Chrome. Do you have a favorite Chrome album?
Guess what my favorite Chrome album is?
Alien soundtracks.
Fuck you, Marty Räikkönen.
Oh, damn. Throwing down the agree gauntlet.
Go to hell, Marty Räikkönen.
No.
You go to hell and you die.
You go hell and you die for us agreeing.
Hell, you die.
Yeah, man, that's no, I thought I could have seen you being a Half Machine Lip Moves man.
Love
Yeah.
it. You a half machine lip moves man, Jimmy.
There you go. I love it. Okay. So, yeah. Last thing to say about the Five album, they go deeper than they ever do again, I think, or before.
That's what she said.
Ooh, with the instrumentation stuff and all the credits for the equipment used, it's unbelievable. If it weren't so awesome, it'd be stupid.
It is pretty fucking unbelievable.
Like Josh Smith's starts, I'm not going to read his whole thing, but it starts like this. The Marshall amplification, the Fender amplification, the original Ron Sargent nine string electric guitar. And it keeps going on like that. It's got an article in front of it. But if you want to know what 13 transducers they used for this album, you can read about the details of each one of them right down to the AKG C14-BULS. So they list 13 transducers.
Get you some.
Get you some transducers. The transducer amplification is a whole other category under that. So they really, the compression limiting is listed, the equalization, the magnetic flux recorders, it's all here.
Yep.
Yeah. You've Got a Thirst, Portland. Another great title from Three. You've Got a Thirst, Portland.
You got a thirst, Portland.
You know that was like a Diet 7-Up billboard they saw while they were Portland once. All right, we're gonna switch to 5 years later. So the longest gap between recordings for them so far, and ever, because they really haven't done much since. So Josh Smith actually left the band in this time, and he doesn't play on Six. He was replaced by a guy named Phil Manley. Phil Manley, I believe, is that the guy that from Trans Am?
Yes. And
Yeah.
they did a split with them earlier.
And I think they've recorded albums together. I know I wrote down in my notes that as Trans Champs and then the fucking Am. I love the fucking Am. So
And
yeah.
can I tell you a little something?
Of course.
I guess I'm telling everybody something. So if I ever had a career in porn, my porn name would be Sir Manly Pounding.
And did Phil Manley just remind you of this?
They did.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing. Moving
No,
on.
that's for sure. Yeah.
That's really good, man. All right. Do you think that's in your future?
Probably not.
Probably not. That's a dream you're letting die.
Probably not, but anyway.
It's a dream you're letting die.
A boy can dream.
Moving forward, this is a little track from Six called A Forgotten Chapter in the History of Ideas.
Hot rocking.
It is.
I mean, really. And I agree with you. Like, I was very distraught that Josh left the band, but they kept up the potency.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that they totally knew who they were at this point. And I'm sure that a guy like Phil Manley with his background can come in and kill it with them. And he did. It, I mean, who knows why they didn't last? I've never heard it. They seem to just fade away. You know, this is a really solid album. I didn't give it the chance it deserved when it came out. Not what's that?
You can give the champs.
I didn't give the champs the chance with this album that I might have if Josh had stayed. I don't know if I was prejudiced or if I was just into other stuff at the time.
I was.
It
took me a while to get around to it because I was bummed that Josh left.
Yeah, well,
Josh was the champs.
He's a big part of the sound. But man, this album lacks nothing. This is so total champs. You know, it really is as good as the others. I don't put it a rung under them anymore. I think I just didn't give it enough time when it came out. Now that I have, I'm going to listen to it again sometime in the coming weeks because it's been a long time since I've listened to it, but I know I love it. They just kept everything up that the band was always about. And I think we'll hear strong evidence of that on this one. This is called Dolores Park. Thank you. Wow.
Yeah, totally new champs.
Yeah, could have come off of any given Prague record from 1975 or something.
Totally, totally. So yeah, no, it says Trespass.
Oh, yeah, it is very early Genesis, pastoral, melancholy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, good call. Good call. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a quiz since you're the Drag City man here. Who's Neil Hamburger?
Oh, he's a comedian.
Oh, is he? He appears on this album courtesy of Drag City, and I knew I'd heard the name. I just could not place it. But apparently he has voice on this album somewhere. I've never noticed it before.
He's a guy that is well loved in the indie scene. As a, I think he did prank calls and like a kind of an outsider comedian.
Like prankster. Okay. Yeah, man. I knew I'd heard his name, so I'm glad I asked. Also, we have Jackie Perez Gratz on cello here. And I believe she isn't she the one from like Gracion and is it Amber Asylum? Giant Squid.
Oh, okay.
We're gonna leave you with another track from Six called Earth and Sculptor. We will be back to talk about it and reveal our next episode after this bit of snippet. Well, we end with one of the very, very best and hottest Champs tracks, no doubt.
Hot shit.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's the majesty we're talking about again. That's the metal that they put across. It's beautiful. Go ahead.
Hot ass majesty.
Hot ass ma Hot ass majesty. Yes. We can't tell you how many times in Hunter and I's friendship that we have come across stupid turns of phrase and gone, oh, that's a Champs song title. Like we do that all the time.
Can you imagine how many we would have if we actually wrote those down?
Dude, if they come back, I've got 3 albums worth for them. Yeah, I wish we would have written these down. But Hot Ass Majesty is one of them. Yeah, there we go. We love the Champs. This was one of those love letters. Just having fun kicking back and listening to more Champs. I'm gonna bust out 5 and 6 and listen to them soon. I need those right now.
Same.
Right on. Next episode, we are going to cover the second album by Canada's Dead Brain Cells, aka DBC, and that's the Mighty Universe album released in 1989. This is certainly in the Radical Research wheelhouse. It's pretty much foundational for what we do here, the kind of stuff we try to give
Absolutely.
more attention to. Am I right?
Yep. It's a sort of weird Voivodian thrash record.
Yeah, it falls in that whole realm of Voivod, Dead Brain Cells, Oblivion, just kind of the weirder, spacier, more cosmic bands from Canada in that era. Very special time and a very special album. So, see you then, Hunter. And as ever, Legions, thank you for listening and keep it weird.